Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Order a Highlander by Rebecca Preston, narrated by Esme Eyre. Chapter 1. Ruth Roseworth groaned and rubbed her face with the heels of her hands for what felt like the 50th time that day. At this rate, she was going to turn up in Scotland with purple bruises along her cheekbones, where she'd been attempting to relieve her headache with a bit of amateur acupressure. Unfortunately, the headache was no longer the only symptom. She also had a crick in her neck from trying to sleep against the plane window, a sore back from dragging her suitcase all over LAX, and aching feet from being in queues for what felt like half her lifespan. Never again would she let herself save a few hundred bucks by transferring flights through 3 airports. It just wasn't worth the suffering. At least she was finally on the actual flight now, the longest leg of her journey, the trip that would take her from LAX to Heathrow. From there, she had a bus booked that would take her north, out of busy, bustling London, up into the northern wilds of Scotland. The prospect had faded rapidly out of reality as her focus had been taken up by the excruciating minutiae of travel, of passports and documents and ticket confirmations, of what felt like endless reschedulings and cancellations and rearrangements. But now that she was over the complicated leg of domestic shenanigans and actually on the international long-haul flight that would take her to the UK, she almost felt like she could start looking forward to what the trip was actually about. Well, almost, she thought with a sigh, grimacing as she rubbed the heels of her hands down her jaw as well. She always carried tension in her jaw. It was a writer thing, she suspected, the tension of all that thinking and plotting and scheming that went on in her head just drifted down into her jaw and settled there. Every time she looked up from her keyboard or her notepad, she'd realise she was gritting her teeth hard. It was bound to do some kind of horrific permanent damage to her teeth one of these days, though her dentist always assured her that she was in good shape, dentally speaking. She was only 28. The awful problems were no doubt waiting until her 30th to set in. At least she didn't have a sweet tooth to worry about. The jaw-clenching habit was bad enough. She'd always been loath to put her poor teeth under any more pressure. Initially, when she'd been planning this trip, she'd intended to get some writing done on the plane. That felt like a joke now, the neatly organised notes in her carry-on backpack seeming to mock her every time she reached into the bag for a sip of water or a peppermint to ease the nausea that the rocky flight was causing. Right now, nothing in the world seemed less appealing than trying to work through the notes she'd written in a fit of excitement, way back when she'd gotten the go-ahead to actually take this trip. It was a big deal, actually. She was a fairly successful writer, especially for this point in her career, with half a dozen books already out under her name, plus a couple she'd written for someone else. But she couldn't count those. Ghostwriting paid the bills, but it didn't exactly bring fame and fortune with it. She'd been wanting to push herself for a while, though. Writing mystery novels was great fun, but so far everything she'd written was contemporary fiction. She loved history, loved research, loved burying herself in a brand new knowledge of another time and place. And when she'd stumbled upon a cryptic reference to some ancient murderer in a news article she'd been skim-reading in her doctor's waiting room, the seed of an idea had been planted. Her agent had been enthusiastic, to her great relief. She'd been apprehensive about mentioning the prospect to him. It felt like a pretty significant genre shift to go from contemporary mystery novel to historical mystery. But Jake's dark eyes had widened with delight, and he'd clapped his hands together, flashing her that toothy smile that meant either he was trying to get on her good side before breaking some bad news, or that he was honestly enthusiastic about the idea. And it had turned out to be the latter. She'd started drafting the book at once. but as work had gone on, it had become clear that she'd need much more research than a half-remembered article in a magazine. Books about the era were well and good, but what she really needed were facts about the murderer himself. All she could find in most of the books she read were vague references to poisonings. The best source she found was in a collection of essays about various unsolved murders throughout history. The majority of the book was taken up by accounts of Jack the Ripper, but the Dunscaith killer with whom she'd become so rapidly obsessed had a few pages to himself as well. It seemed, from what she could gather, that he'd had a run of victims to rival Jack the Ripper himself, and, more to the point, he'd never been caught. Hers would be a speculative novel, she knew that much. But her inventions were only going to take the place of information that wasn't available. Details that had been lost to time, like the identity of the killer, and how exactly it was that he'd gotten away with his crimes. But, aside from that, she was determined to make this new novel as historically accurate as possible. And that meant, she'd realized, that she needed to visit Dunscaith. She needed to get a feel for the place as much as she needed to speak with local experts. And to her surprise, when she'd mentioned the idea of travelling to Jake, he'd nodded like it was the most natural thing in the world.
Of course, research is essential. And tax deductible, he added with that flashy smile of his. When are you going? Let me help plan the trip.
Imposter syndrome. That was what it was, Ruth thought now, shaking her head as she remembered how shocked she'd felt by his support. Of course she needed to do on-the-ground research if she wanted to write a book about a country she'd never been to. Of course it made sense to fly her out for the trip. The publishing house had even covered a chunk of her expenses, which had shocked her. But she couldn't help but wonder if maybe she'd been a little conservative in what she'd asked for. The publishers certainly made enough money off her books, and if this one was a success, which she certainly intended for it to be, they'd definitely see a sizable return on their investment. Maybe she shouldn't have booked the absolute cheapest flight she could have found, on reflection. She'd just wanted to be a writer for so long that it was sometimes hard to believe that she'd actually made it. That her novels were successful and popular enough that people were paying her to write them, to research them, to work on them in relative comfort. Gone were her days of scrimping and saving, of working 10-hour shifts in crappy bars to afford rent on her shitty one-bedroom apartment, scrounging what time she could to feverishly submit her short stories to any magazine that had expressed interest, sending portfolio after portfolio to agents and publishing houses, amassing a sizable collection of polite and encouraging rejection letters. Those years were still so vivid in her recent memory that it felt strange to know that she'd actually made it. She was a writer, not an aspiring writer. Not an emerging writer, but an established professional novelist with an agent and a contract and a comfortably full bank account. Still, too late for regret now. Next time she went on a research trip for an upcoming book, she'd book a more expensive ticket. Maybe she'd even get very bold and go for business class. Maybe she'd be able to afford it out of her own pocket. She grinned to herself a little as she shifted in the tiny, economy-sized seat, trying to ease some of the ache on her back as she stretched her neck on each side. There was no harm in dreaming big, right? Maybe this next book would be a runaway success. Maybe they'd even get into talks with film executives, start talking about film options. That was a world she had no experience with whatsoever, but she trusted her agent to follow the money, if there was money to be followed. But right now she just had to focus on where she was going and what she was doing next. And what she was doing next, she realized with a grimace, as the pilot announced their impending descent, was getting on a bus and taking a very long trip to Scotland. God, she'd been an idiot when she'd planned the trip. She'd anticipated sleeping on the plane. What optimism! If she'd caught any sleep at all in between the crying babies, the turbulence, and the rhythmic kicking of the child in the seat behind her, she couldn't remember it. She'd never felt more miserable and exhausted in her life. She should have booked a hotel in London at least for a night. A hot shower and a good night's sleep sounded like absolute bliss right now. But no.
"And miles to go before I sleep," she murmured to herself, shaking her head as she pulled a compact mirror out of her bag.
At least she hadn't been dumb enough to try wearing makeup on the flight. She checked her reflection to make sure she didn't look like a complete zombie, and grimaced. Maybe not a complete zombie, but she was 3/4 of the way there at least. Her usually pale skin looked even paler than usual, wan and decidedly corpse-like in the unpleasant fluorescent light of the airplane. Even her sprinkling of freckles looked pale. Her strawberry blonde hair, wispy at the best of times, was flattened to her head. She combed at it hopefully with her fingers, but almost immediately gave up trying to impose any kind of order to the mess. There were dark circles under her bright green eyes, and she wrinkled her nose at herself in the mirror before snapping it shut. Well, she'd just have to deal with looking like a zombie for a little while. At least she wouldn't look much worse than her passport photo, which had been just about the least flattering image ever captured of her. An hour later she was off the plane, through immigration, and ready to be unleashed on the unsuspecting British public. There was no shortage of other Americans around her. She had a suspicion that the tour she'd booked might just be popular with tourists, as a loud, chattering crowd swept her along in its wake. Sure enough, the dozen or so Americans were all headed for the same bus she was, and Ruth fought back a sigh as she gave up on the idea of sleeping on the bus. It was going to be a long 10 hours, she suspected. But still, it was exciting to be here, and despite her bone-deep exhaustion, she couldn't help but grin a little at the sights and sound around her. The busy crowds, the English accents, even the slightly different spellings in the pamphlet about Scotland she leafed through as she waited to climb aboard the bus that would take her north. North, first to Glasgow for the night, then to the Isle of Skye the following morning, where she'd finally see Dunscaith with her own eyes. Chapter 2. In the end, to her surprise, she did manage to doze on the bus. As she'd suspected, many of her fellow Americans were heading for the same tour she was. She supposed that it served her right for signing up for the first castle tour that included the ruins of Dunscaith Castle prominently on the itinerary. It seemed Scotland did a bustling trade in tours of castles. But as she looked around at the cheerfully chattering crowds, she wondered whether she should maybe have looked for something a little more, well, serious. It was history she wanted, not photo opportunities. She wanted the boring nitty-gritty, the tiny details of how people lived their lives, what it was like to be a person in the 16th century. And she had a suspicion that the kinds of questions she was going to ask weren't going to be of much interest to the rest of the group. Still, at least she was finally in the right place, on the bus, body and soul mostly together, and her worst nightmare, her suitcase getting lost at Heathrow, had in the end not happened. Too many other things had gone wrong, she supposed with a rueful grin. There just wasn't room for a missing suitcase. She settled herself into a seat at the back of the bus with her backpack on the seat beside her, hoping against hope that there wouldn't be some friendly solo traveller who'd decide to try to befriend her. And in the end, there wasn't. The bus was about 3/4 full, and the seat next to her was still empty as the bus finally rolled out of the airport and set off on the journey north, to a subdued but bright cheer from the people on it. Ruth settled in against the window, wedging her jacket between her face and the glass, in the hopes that it might be comfortable enough to catch a tiny bit of sleep. She had no idea what time it was, but any worries about avoiding jet lag were well and truly behind her now. All she wanted was sleep. They'd get into Glasgow in the late evening, according to the itinerary, and she knew she'd sleep like the dead once she was finally in a bed.
Right now, all she wanted was for the time between now and then to pass quicker. It wasn't the best sleep she'd ever had, but she did manage to doze on and off, the low voices of her fellow travellers oddly soothing as she drifted in and out of sleep, their voices providing an odd backdrop to the snatches of dreaming her exhausted mind was doing. Strange dreams, dreams of castles looming up on the road ahead of them, of shadowy, murderous figures haunting their stoops. All of that made perfect sense, she supposed, what with the amount of reading she'd been doing about medieval Scotland and Dunscaith in particular. Still, they weren't particularly pleasant dreams. Splashes of blood and gore and an undeniable air of menace surrounded her, and every time she startled awake on the bus, she was surprised to find herself surrounded only by modernity. They rolled into Glasgow late that night, right on schedule, and Ruth all but fell out of the bus in her rush to get to her hotel room. She'd fussed over the booking when she'd been planning the trip, worried that the hotel was a little expensive for just one night. But right now she was grateful she'd spared the extra expense. The check-in process was fast and smooth, the lilting Scottish accent of the man who checked them all in absolutely delightful, and it felt like bare minutes between getting off the bus and finally stepping into a room that was all hers. The bed sang its siren song to her. It was all she could do to force herself into the shower first. The water was hot and the pressure was good. She groaned with relief as it hit her aching muscles, running down her stiff neck, her sore shoulders, her miserable lower back. She stood for what must have been 5 or 10 minutes, feeling a pang of residual guilt for wasting water that didn't quite manage to stir her into action. Then, when she felt herself swaying a little with exhaustion, she made quick work of washing her hair and soaping herself down, before flicking the water off and wrapping herself in a fluffy towel. Heaven! She almost felt like a human being again. She barely remembered getting to bed, only that she collapsed into it like a sack of potatoes. And unlike the bus trip, not a single dream disturbed her rest. Ruth was out like a light the minute her head hit the pillow, and when she stirred in the morning to the bright sound of the phone alarm she'd cleverly remembered to set before getting in the shower, she felt a little more like herself. And not a moment too soon. She climbed out of bed and dressed herself quickly, digging a quick change of clothes out of her suitcase. No sense unpacking here. They were checking out bright and early, climbing onto a bus that was destined to reach the Dunscaith ruins by around midday. Yawning, she zipped her suitcase back up, checked her face in the mirror, still pale and tired-looking, but miles better than the gaunt spectre she'd been on the airplane. Gave the bed that had been her salvation one last lingering look of gratitude, then turned on her heel and headed for the reception desk. Maybe she should have booked a few days here, she thought with a sigh, as her suitcase was slung aboard yet another bus. It would have been good to have a little more time to recover from the flight, to be sharp and poised and ready for the visit to Dunscaith. She felt better than yesterday, sure, but she still felt scattered and tired and on edge, and the laughter of a huge family that was climbing aboard the bus set her teeth on edge. 5 kids, all under 10, and their laughing parents. They settled in the front rows of the bus, and Ruth made sure to take a seat toward the back. Marriage, children. There was a thought to add to the growing list of things she had very little experience with. Her mother had been making idle comments lately. Not too many, but enough to make it very clear that she was giving more and more thought to the prospect of grandchildren. And as her mother's only child, Ruth was the only hope there. Unfortunately, though, there were a few more ingredients required for grandchildren than simply a hopeful grandmother. Like anything resembling a romantic life, for example. She'd been on dates, of course, at least 3 of them. Nobody she'd ever seen again, of course, and no real spark or interest that had gone much beyond a slightly awkward end-of-the-evening kiss. If she was honest, the majority of her romantic experience had happened in high school,
with an intense young man who'd been editor of the school paper and gotten to know her through the endless short stories she kept submitting for publication. She'd been wary, though, of getting involved with him. Even at 16, she was worried about how it would look for her to be involved with the editor of a paper that was publishing her work. It was important that she succeed only on her own merit. No sleeping her way to the top here. She couldn't help but grin at the memory of how serious she'd been about a few awkward teenaged make-out sessions in dark rooms at parties. Her career had always come first, hadn't it? Her work, her art, getting established, working her way to a place where she could afford to write full-time instead of working in crappy cafes. But at the same time, she knew it had always been something of a crutch, the career excuse. A convenient shield to hide behind, something that would allow her to sidestep intimacy and vulnerability, a justification for avoiding all the risks of romantic entanglement, and, at the same time, all the rewards. What would it be like, she wondered, to be sharing her pleasant little two-bedroom flat back in LA with a boyfriend, or a fiancé even, to be planning a life together, thinking about starting a family like the raucous gaggle down the front of the bus. Maybe not quite so big a family, she thought ruefully, her eyes resting on the mother of the children, who was deep in conversation with the littlest child, a toddler of maybe 2 or 3 years of age. The woman barely looked older than Ruth. How on earth had she had the time to have so many children? Then again, Ruth had published 5 books. She hid a giggle behind her hand, amused by the comparison despite herself. Writing a book was definitely nothing like having a baby. After all, once the book was written, the work was over. When it came to babies, it seemed like the making of them was the easy part. Not that she had any experience with that particular activity either. She'd intended to spend the bus trip going over her notes again, but she couldn't help but peer out of the window instead, especially once they got out of Glasgow and onto the open road. The changing countryside through the window was just so unbelievably beautiful. She had chosen a good time to visit, so her agent had said. It was early spring, and though there was a chill in the air, it was nowhere near as savage as it could get during winter. No snow either, which she was grateful for. This was a big enough shock without adding temperature to the mix. She'd never lived outside of California, and she didn't think snow was really something she could handle along with everything else. The bridge to Skye was a particularly exciting moment. Even the sleepier members of the tour group perked up when the tour guide announced they were approaching the bridge, crowding to the windows to peer down at the sea below. For Ruth, the water wasn't particularly exciting. She'd grown up in California, after all. But catching sight of the Isle of Skye itself sent a shiver of anticipation down her spine, as well as a note of foreboding. This was it. The place she'd been reading about for so long. The place where the murderer who she'd been so inspired to write about had plied his trade all those centuries ago. And just as she'd hoped, being here made it all feel so much more real. Before, it was history. Pages in a book, words on paper. Nothing as solid and tangible as the rocks and trees and stone cliffs outside the bus window, as they were carried by their little bus over the sea to Skye. Ruth's stomach was growling by the time the bus finally pulled over to the side of the road, and she was grateful that she'd opted for the tour that included a packed lunch among its various additions and extras. The group pulled out of the bus and Ruth followed, backpack slung over her back, shivering a little at the brisk sea wind that came whipping from across the ocean and toyed with her hair in its ponytail. It was colder here than it had been in Glasgow, especially here, close to the edge of a cliff that dropped straight down into the sea. And her eyes widened as she turned to see the ruins of what could only be Castle Dunscaith. Lunch first, she told herself, feeling her heart pounding. The tour guide led them all to a little picnic area close to the castle, clearly designed for the purpose. She could tell from the overfull bins that they weren't the first tour group to have come through today. though she tried not to let that knowledge dim her enthusiasm. Just because she was a tourist right now didn't mean the experience was any less authentic. She set about demolishing her lunch, sitting at a table with a quiet elderly couple who gave her a friendly smile and nod, but didn't seem interested in disturbing her peace. The rest of the group, though, were gathered around the tour guide, and Ruth lowered her sandwich, curious to hear what the woman was telling them in hushed tones. But she quickly lost interest when she heard what the guide was saying. Ghost stories and folklore of the area, not at all her area of interest. If anything, she was a little annoyed by the prevalence of stories of ghosts and witches and supernatural shenanigans in her research. So often she'd thought she'd found a book of actual historical fact, only for the writer to start carrying on about legends of mythical supernatural creatures, all great warriors who could fight for 10 days straight without food or rest. All witches. Endless references to witches. And if there was one thing Ruth didn't have any time for, it was magic. Chapter 3. Still, she couldn't help but tune in as the tour guide continued with the tale she was telling. It sounded vaguely familiar, actually. Ruth suspected she'd run across it once or twice in her own reading. The Legend of Skaha, some kind of powerful warrior woman who was rumoured to have built Castle Dunscaith. Completely ridiculous, of course. None of the stories could seem to make their mind up about exactly which century the woman had lived in, as she'd seemingly been sighted just about once a week for several hundred years, if every eyewitness account was to be believed. But an enjoyable enough story, she supposed, especially for the gaggle of children who were gathered around the tour guide and gazing up at her wide-eyed. And who was Ruth to get grumpy about a bit of female representation in folklore? So often the heroes of lore were kings and princes, lords and noblemen, with their women, presumably, sitting at home doing their laundry and darning their socks, and taking care of all the less glamorous tasks that would allow their men to carry out all this heroism. Who did Skaha's laundry for her? Ruth wondered as she finished her sandwich. The legends never did touch on those kinds of details, did they? By the time lunch was finished, most of the children had disappeared, running amongst the ruins and brandishing sticks at each other, all competing to be the most fearsome Skaha present. Ruth watched them go, grateful that their ear-splitting squealing would be some distance from her at last. As well as she'd slept at the hotel last night, one night's sleep wasn't quite enough to take the edge off the jet lag, or the residual stress and exhaustion of the trip. She wished, on reflection, that she could be taking this tour of the ruins of Dunscaith a few days from now, when she was less out of sorts and grumpy. Still, as the tour guide gathered the remaining adults and began to call fruitlessly for the children to return to them so that they could tour the inside of the castle, Ruth pulled herself firmly together. This was the whole reason for the trip. She had to pay attention. The castle had been taller once. She knew that much from the pictures. Though, according to the tour guide, it was a surprisingly well-preserved ruin, with its entire first floor still standing, and even a part of the second, although the stairs leading up to the second floor were firmly roped off and barricaded. Unsafe, apparently. The floors might fall in under the weight of tour groups if they were allowed through. But they were still permitted to wander through the ground floor rooms, and so Ruth followed the group, listening patiently to the tour guide and wondering quietly to herself whether the woman would ever get to anything actually informative about Dunscaith. It was just more and more about the legendary warrior woman Skaha who'd allegedly built the place, and Ruth had a suspicion that the tour guide was improvising a little.
"Rumours say that Skaha possessed magical powers," the tour guide was murmuring intensely, drawing the excited group in close as they stood together in what had once been the kitchen of the castle. Ruth had about a dozen questions about how meals had been prepared in the medieval era. Did the fires just keep burning, or were they lit fresh each morning? How many of the ovens would have been in use at any given time? How were pots cleaned?
but she had a suspicion that the tour guide was more interested in telling ghost stories. Gritting her teeth, she listened as the guide continued about Skaha, trying to keep the sour expression from her face. The rest of the tourists seemed to be having a good time.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?